is Joanne Ray with Senior Marketing Specialists, and I'm super proud to have each of you with us today. This is such an exciting format for me because this kind of gives me the chance to share with you the conversations and some of the privilege that I have of being able to be side by side with some of the people that I've met over the years in my career and to bring those conversations to you. And as I mentioned before, this is not a format for the top 10 things that our next guest has learned in business that you're going to want to write down. This is everything that goes on behind the scenes, the feelings, the real stuff, if you will. If we could peel back the layers, I was just telling Mary, one of the things that I always like doing is whenever anything comes out, a movie or a TV show or something that's a hit, I want to watch that, but then I always want to go back and figure out, I want to watch the biography about those people and what made them get to that level, all the parts they didn't get before they got to that part, and to get to the real, again, the human connection of that. So very excited to introduce our first guest today. Mary is just one of those people that once you meet her, you just want to find any other reason you can to be in the same room with her and to share her energy. So super excited today to introduce you to Mary Tautemus. Hopefully I got that right.
That's right. You got it. Very good.
Mary at our office. So
yeah.
Thank you. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here talking with you.
Yeah. So this will be a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun conversations over the years, different conferences and events. I've even talked to you as Elvis and who were... Oh.
We just pulled that video out the other day. Yeah.
You're really?
Our golden nuggets in Denver, Colorado. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you never know which Mary you're going to get.
That's right.
But for those people listening today that haven't met you yet, Mary, tell us a little bit about your background, what your journey has been like to where you are right now.
So my journey in business and in family business started when I was 17. I started working when I was 16, and I tell people it's not because I was some sort of entrepreneurial prodigy. It was because I had my son when I was 15 and I needed to hustle. I needed to work. And a funny story is that my dad told me, you can live here. You know, when I told him that I was pregnant, he said, you can live here. We'll make sure that you have the food that you need, the things that you need. But there's one condition, and that is that you have to use cloth diapers. Oh. And I thought, and so he said, if you don't want to use cloth diapers, then you need to go to work. And I was like, I guess I'm going to work.
That's the line.
That was this weird thing that he said. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. I'm 15, you know, 16 years old. Like, I'd never even changed a diaper, let alone the thought of what that might entail. So I started working when I was 16 at a car wash. I was working as a cashier. The guy paid me under the table, and he let me bring my baby to work so I could, you know, so he sat there in a car seat. So I started working at 16, started working in our family business at 17 when my dad bought our insurance agency. By that time, I had moved my way up in the world to a receptionist at a car dealership. And he said, if you could be a receptionist there, why not come be a receptionist here? Yeah. It made sense. And so that kind of where my family business journey started, and then spent 22 years in the business with my family. Left a couple of times, left when I was 19, because I was like, it's Medicare and long-term care insurance. When you're 19, that's not exactly the sexiest thing you could be doing. You know, like, there has to be something different for me. Then my brother passed away, my oldest brother passed away, and that really brought us all kind of closer back together. So I came back into the family business after that happened. So I was 19, my brother was 23. Mm-hmm. And then, left again when I was 27 for other reasons, operational reasons, family reasons, and then came back. And then, most recently left again, it was just time. It was just, I had reached my ceiling as an entrepreneur and had other things that I really wanted to do with my life to impact other people, outside of the role in the business.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I want to get to what you are doing currently because I want to learn more about it. I'm very intrigued by all of that. But tell us a little bit about that. I mean, you and Paul were working literally side by side. I think the first time I visited you, I think you were in an office together where you were like, you know, paper spit wads at each other. I think
probably. Yeah, and we were probably literally doing that at that time too.
But,
you know, the unique opportunity that we had was being twins in life, in real life, we're twins. He's 6 minutes older than I am. and, you know, being womb mates, as he calls it. And, you know, when you're twins, it's a really interesting thing because you're just so connected. You just spend all of your time together. And we moved a lot growing up. My parents were both pastors and you move a lot. It's like being a military kid, being a pastor's kid. And so we were even closer because when you move and you're a kid, what's the worst time of day when you're at school, when you're a kid, when you move? It's like recess and lunch.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Horrible.
Everybody's friends for their friend group.
Yeah. And you're like, you feel so naked and vulnerable, like when you don't have a group to flock to. So we had each other. So we were really, really close. And so he started in the business a year later than I did. I started at 17. He started when he was 18. And the twin competitiveness was really healthy for the business because, you know, if we were learning how to type, it was like, I can type faster than you can. Or if we were, you know, like, so we were really efficient and we really kind of helped each other level up. So, working with Paul for 22 years, I run the risk of getting emotional. It's hard. I miss him a lot. We don't work together anymore now. And, I miss him a lot. That's kind of hard.
You guys have one of the rare connections. I keep using that word a lot, but the connection that you two have, whether it's again at a party, at a family dinner, at a meeting, at a conference, at a seminar, or sitting side by side, you know, building a new operational system or a new sales team or training of employees, you guys just have that connection, and it's something to be, you know, nurtured and taken care of. And I can only imagine that there had to be, even as close as you are, there still had to be times where, you know, it's still family and it's still hard to work with somebody that, you know, you're going to ride home with, or, you know,
right.
on Sunday. And somehow you guys just, I don't know that it felt easy, but you made it look very easy.
I think my dad really set the stage really well for us. And the three of us were a really awesome trio together. You know, our skill sets complemented each other. I think in any business or even family structure, when you have two people who are so much alike, that's where you get conflict. And we were just uniquely different enough that we brought different value to the table. But he also taught us that, you know, let's say that this is the issue. Whatever the issue is, this is the issue. It's not about you and me. We're not going, you know, toe to toe on the mat as you against me. It's weird, but we're all so passionate about the work that we're doing and creating a really phenomenal result that we all realize that that's what we're fighting for. We are not fighting. So we would be in meetings and we would be just, I mean, you'd think that we were really like fighting, like they would probably make other people uncomfortable, but right afterwards, like, hey, what are you doing for lunch? It's like two attorneys in a courtroom. Like you're fighting a case. You're not fighting with each other.
Right.
And I work with a lot of companies now and what I do, and I teach the same thing. It's about the issue and it's about the greater good of the organization. There were times in the business, like when it was time to shut down long-term care, that was my baby. Like I was the long-term care person. My whole identity was tied up in that. And so much of our identity is tied up in the work that we do. And I told my dad and my brother, I said, I think we need to shut this down, just all the shifting in the marketplace. And what I was saying is, let me turn off the lights in the room that is everything me. If you could imagine like having a room with all the pictures in it and your whole life is in it. And let me just turn the light off and close the door of that room and then walk out and go, well, now what am I going to do?
Is there another room waiting for me?
I didn't actually know. And unfortunately, that's the opportunity in entrepreneurial and family businesses, is that you have that a lot extra safety in that, okay, while Paul was having so much success in Medicare, it was clear to see that the infrastructure, it was like if we were a house, we were standing on toothpicks and we needed a new foundation. And so then I was like, I guess I'll go learn that. So I went in and started learning. And that took a whole new skill set. And that's kind of when we got introduced to Tony Robbins, because I needed new skills. If I was going to do this new thing, I had to level up. And so I was just seeking, like, where do I get those skills without having to go get a degree? Because that was going to take too much time.
Before we jump to Tony Robbins, and I do want to, I'm so jealous of you and Paul for being able to do that or deciding to do that. I would go back to your analogy of the conflict, and I've actually used that. I've held up a pen just like you just did. to show the tangible, right? This is what we're having a conflict about or having a conversation about, not me versus you. And that's really, really hard because most of the people that we work with are in this business because we chose them, and a lot of the characteristics that we like are passion and driven, and those types of people, the creative, the energetic, those types of people are going to be very committed to their thing, their department, their product, their decision, their team. Mm-hmm. And that's usually where conflict arises, is when you've got that,
it's mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you're saying it's either not good, not wanted, not what we need, or you're just wrong.
Right.
And we forget that it's this that we're talking about, not you. But it's so, that's probably the biggest issue we have in any company, but I'll definitely speak for ours, of that passionate, this mm-hmm. is mine, this is my team, this is my project, this is my, mm-hmm. my CRM. And now you're saying something is wrong with it, or you're saying that it's wrong, or you're saying we need to change it. And now that's reflecting on me.
Right. And so it feels so deeply personal.
Yeah, I can feel it. Yeah. It's like, yeah. You know, what's the saying, you know, I can make fun of my kids, but you better not.
Right. Right. So what we call it is the sacred cow. Yep. And in this business, and even in your marriage, if you're talking about your family, it's the same thing. There's no, the only difference is just it's relationships. Right. And so in relationships, whether it's business or personal, there are no sacred cows, meaning if we're interested in the greater good of this relationship. So I just think about an argument with my, you know, if I'm having an argument with my husband, I have to, you know, Stephen Covey talks about responsibility, and he breaks the two apart. Yep. And the reason he does that is he creates the space in the moment that somebody has that you realize you have the ability to decide how you're going to respond to this thing. And usually we close that gap and we just respond and we get emotional. And this was happening yesterday in the car with my husband. My husband wanted me to, we had a day off. It was our wedding anniversary. Oh. We're going up to Sedona to go hiking for the day.
Oh, and birthday.
It was so wonderful. And he wants me to look at an app for our business. And I'm like, I would like to check out today. He wants me to look at this app. I also get car sick when I look at things on my phone too long. But he was, and so I had this moment where I got to decide what my response was. And so I had to back up for just a moment and understand. And I was frustrated and I was pretending to look at my phone. Like, yeah, I'm looking for the app that you're asking me to look for.
Not here, I don't do it.
And I'm like, it's just not happening, you know? And I'm like, and in my head, and I'm just taking this moment to think, how does he feel right now? What is it? What is it that he needs right now? What is he so excited to show me, and why? And if I really thought about it, he had put a ton of time and energy, and he was really proud of the work that he had done. Yeah. And it really is good work. And he needed me to see that. And I needed to see that. And I needed to risk a little car sickness and a little, just to see him in that moment, because he deserved that. And because I love him, and the outcome that I want in this argument is to be more connected and to have deeper love after any argument. Or if it's the same thing in a business, it's, I want us to have a more connected team and deeper love for my team, and understand that it's about the outcome. And what is the outcome that I want? We want to have a really healthy, solid team who's producing phenomenal results, you know, and then in the marriage, it's this other thing. So it's that the opportunity is in that moment to assess what's really happening and understand not what's going on for me, but what he might need. So.
Oh my God, that's so good. I heard a speaker once say that the secret to, and then fill in the blank, marriage, partnership, business, you know, whatever, leadership. Everybody says it's communication, right? Secret to a good whatever relationship is communication. And he said, actually, we need to change that, and we need to fill in the word expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that example, and I've got many of my own as well, but in that example, your husband was so excited to share that moment about this particular app. We're in the car together. It's just the two of us. That probably doesn't happen very often. We don't have phones ringing and stuff bothering us. So we're going to work on this together. That was how it's going in his mind.
Right.
In mind, it's like, I'm off. I'm out.
Right.
I'm checked out. Let's talk about us today. And that's where that So his feelings were probably hurt. His feelings mm-hmm. were, wait, I thought you wanted to work on this. I thought this meant as much to you. And you're like, I just don't want to do it now.
Right, right.
But his expectations were not met. And that's, I tell everybody that my poor husband gets kind of what's left of me at the end of the day. You know, because we're on all day, firing on all cylinders. My team needs this, so I'm going to be this. And you and I get to do stuff like this throughout the day with people we admire and respect. And I'm on and I'm ready and I'm charged. And by the end of the day, when he's ready to say, well, how was this or how was that or share his day? I'm like, oh, I just want a minute. I just want to not answer questions for a minute. I want to just kind of be here. You can be in the same room. I like being in the same room with you, but can we just be?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, ready to hear about my day. And he doesn't want a canned answer. Like if he'll say, how was your day? And I say, fine. That's like,
yeah.
You know, and both and vice versa too. If he goes somewhere and has some event and comes back and I get a one word, I'm like, oh, well, don't know what's going on there.
Right.
You're done sometimes at the end of the day, or it doesn't even have to be at the end of the day. Sometimes throughout the day, when you're on and going so much, especially like what you're doing, so remembering that sometimes when other people bring up things that you feel like is an inconvenience in their mind, take that shift really quick. What were they wanting to get out of this? What were they expecting?
Yeah, go back to them. Exactly. Going back to outcome, like just okay, and just what's the thing that matters the most right now? It's connection, it's outcome. And so in that moment with your husband, you know, and I think that you know, and you've raised kids while building businesses, right?
Yep.
In my reality, with four kids at home, and at the time there was even a period where we were starting up another business within our business, and then I would get home and I had my youngest was a year old all the way up to, you know, kids in high school. And you get home and we also had an aging parent living with us too at the time. Mm-hmm. And the aging parent was able to help with things, but wasn't helping with things. And so it was like, hey, Mary T, my mother-in-law, she's wonderful. But she, like, I would come home and she's like, hey, Mary T, what's for dinner? Because culturally, this is how they did things. And so you're coming home and you're coming back into the storm of being needed even more. If you think you're needed at work, at home, people need you even more and on a deeper level. And it's so important to create space, finding ways to create that space, having the conversation to say, hey, when I get home, I need to have this decompression time, or, you know, being able to say what you need. It's funny. Right. I have such a hard time saying that something that I want. If I say, I want 30 minutes to myself, I almost feel guilty. And I think a lot of women do. Right. It's something that we're just not wired to do, is to tell people what our wants and needs are.
We're usually the very naturally and nurturally want to take care of every, whatever's in the room, a child, mm-hmm. mate, a coworker. One of the things, and my kids aren't at home anymore, but when they were, a lesson that I learned very early on from another very wise woman who had gone through and had a very successful career while raising a family. And one of the things that I learned by watching her and just sharing things with her, when my kids were little and you drop them off either at daycare or school or whatever, when you pick them up, don't ever apologize for being at work. When they say anything about your day, it's like, oh, I had a great day, but I'm so happy now to be here with you. Mm-hmm. Oh, greatest time meeting this new person at work today.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, you're not going to talk to them about long-term care, right?
Right. Right.
The fact that they know that you had a great day does not take away, but now I'm so happy to be here with you. And then own it, you know, you had a great day, but own the fact that now it's your time. What do you want to do?
Yeah. Like
5 hours are yours.
That's great. You
know, I think so much as parents, especially moms, we apologize for everything. I'm sorry I'm here. I'm sorry I'm not going to be there. I'm sorry I'm not going to be there. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry I can't do that. I'm sorry. No.
Yeah.
Own it. You know, there's a lot going on in our day, but we chose every single one of those things. There's very few things, and I've gotten to a place where I can say this, but there's very few things that I have to do in a day that I didn't choose. I don't necessarily want to do them all the time.
Right.
But we kind of choose our path, right? So yeah. I'm not going to apologize for anything, but when I'm there, own it.
Yeah.
And don't apologize. I think that's so important for young moms, you know, trying to figure it all out and balance it all. And I've always said you can have it all. Of course you can. It may not look like you thought it was going to look. It may not be everything's perfect, but of course you can have it all because those are your choices. You just got to lean
in. And the opportunity there too, Joanne, I think is, and I'll share something that's really difficult for me. You want behind the scenes. This is sort of behind the scenes. I mean, when I left our business the second time when I was 27 and I had my little one, I had my daughter was, had just been born. And we had just taken on a new partner, a long-term care partner, and they were in like 30 states and we had just only been in Arizona. And so, and then all of a sudden there was CE. Remember there was new CE requirements for long-term care. The partnership program was new. We had to make sure agents were, and then the CE requirements were different in every state. And so I was telling my dad, and my brother at the time, I'm like, I need help. Like I have a newborn, I'm exhausted. And I have this new division. I had two phones on my desk. I had this, financial planning agency's phone on my desk. And then I had this phone and it was literally just the three of us in the office at the time. Like I had that. And they were building Medicare. And I was like, you guys, I can't, you know. And so what would happen is I was failing at work. I was failing. Like people are like, Mary, you didn't give me the quote in time. I was meeting with my client. Like that happened. Yeah. And then I was failing at home because my husband was like, why aren't you doing more arts and crafts with the kids? Like that kind of thing. And I couldn't win anywhere. And I was 100 pounds overweight, which I'm sure, I don't know if we knew each other at that time, but I was 100 pounds overweight. And there was no me. It was completely about the expectations of these people who loved me, I think, but they're not helping me. I'm saying I need help. But then when they say, no, you should be able to do it, I thought, well, there must be something wrong with me because I should be able to do this, right? Raise four kids, take care of an aging parent, you know, make dinner every day, run this agency, work like hell, you know, like, and that's when I left the business at that time. Cause I was going to die. And I told my dad and my brother, I'm going to give you 2 months. I'll help you find somebody else, but I'm going to die. I cannot do this. There must be something wrong with me. And I literally thought that was the case. So I left for a year and I learned so much great stuff. It was like the best thing ever that I left. And it was also the worst year of our life. It was really challenging because I thought I would go into sales full time and go into a commission only. I was not aware that you should probably have some runway before you go become an insurance agent and, you know, try to build something. And so we had my husband's income alone, which wasn't really enough. So we lost our vehicle. We were down to no vehicles that year. We had no kid. We had three kids at that point and no cars. And that's actually when I discovered Tony Robbins, because I was telling my husband one day, I said, this is just so hard. You know, by that time I'd had my kid at 15, I'd helped build a business to a certain point. And I kept thinking at some point, this has to get better. At some point, this has to get easier because it has just been hard the entire time. I'm just exhausted. And I was 27, 28 at the time. And I'm like, maybe by 30, maybe there's this magical thing that happens at 30 that like, I know things and things just fall into place.
Here it is.
We're 30. Here's the light. Exactly. You made it. Yeah. And we had made it to a certain level of success, but had just gone completely backwards and had lost everything. We lost a house and all that stuff.
Oh my goodness.
So I told my husband, I said, I didn't want to commit suicide. It was not suicidal, but I said, I just want to go to sleep and I don't want to wake up. Mm. I'm so tired and I just don't know if I have any more fight in me. And so, I would drink a bottle of wine. Like that was my coping mechanism. And, you know, and then the sugar would wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning as alcohol does. It's a fun fact for you. If you're drinking at night, that's probably why you're waking up early in the morning. And Tony Robbins is on the screen and we had no money. We were negative money, but I had to have, there was like hope in this message that it was enough of what I needed, because it spoke to all of the things that hurt. It spoke to all of the things that weren't working, and it spoke to possibility that I needed. I just needed that so much. So without waking my husband and asking for permission, because we had no money, I just went ahead and bought the CDs. And the guy on the phone was like, you know, you should really get coaching too. I mean, if you get coaching, and I just laughed. I'm like, yeah, I can't even afford these CDs. I agree with you. I'm sure coaching is fabulous. This is what I can afford. And so I started listening to the CDs, and there was a park across the street, and I started going for walks, and I started moving my body, and I started, you know, just getting these messages and kind of reprogramming my brain and understanding that even though we didn't have vehicles, even though we lost our home, even though I had made 20 grand that entire year, didn't pay taxes that year. That's a really good way to get a subscription to the IRS, by the way. If you like mail from the IRS, don't pay your taxes. That took me a while to end that subscription. They don't just end it when you ask, it turns out. But it, like all of that hardship and all, like I was learning, I was growing and I was building, you know, all of this capacity and resiliency, but I was also reprogramming my brain and what I was focusing on. And what I realized is I had so much. Like, even though I didn't have these things and I had hurt in these ways, I had three amazing, beautiful children. Yeah. I had skills. I spoke a language. I had access to the internet and computers. Like, there are people with a lot less than that in the world. I had clothes to wear that were beautiful. They were not like I wanted new stuff, but I had what I needed. I even had jewelry like that I could, you know, show up for an interview if I needed to. And when I started focusing on what I had, life started changing, because you're not in the scarcity mindset anymore. You're in this abundance mindset. And when you're in an abundance mindset, when you're in scarcity, you're living purely in survival. And when you're in survival, there is zero creativity. You're, that part of your brain is not firing. You're in fight, flight, you only see all of the bad stuff because that's how your brain's wired. Your brain is not wired for happiness, and your brain is not wired to see all the good in the world. So it's going to keep you there. You have to move it over here to abundance. And when you're in an abundance mindset, all of a sudden creativity starts happening. And the creativity that happened for me was I didn't have to work for my family in a W-2 capacity because my dad and I had conversations. My parents were coming over and putting food in our fridge at one point. And my dad's like, you know, Mary, you could come back. And I'm like, I can't, because I'll die. Like, it's either this horrible exists, like this reality, or I'll die because I can't do what you need me to do. And when I moved to abundance, the creativity that started to happen was I thought, well, I could go back on a 1099 basis, like as a contractor. I could ghostwrite everything. So I didn't have to ever answer a phone. I didn't have to be the face, because obviously they were the face somehow right now. They were handling that. I could do all of the legwork and not have all of the pressure and then come back in that capacity. So one thing I learned is that if you have a problem and you've only thought of two options, which at the time was go back or stay out, you haven't thought about enough options. If you haven't listed out 10 possibilities of how you could make something work, then you haven't thought enough about it. And so I went back in a contractor capacity. I was ghostwriting everything. I was building things out. And the person that they had hired while I was gone, who was an entry-level administrative assistant, that's who they hired to take my place as this long-term. And so obviously production had gone from, 100K down to So I think they were at 30,000 in premium at that point. Because, it died. And so now I actually had a team member that I didn't have when I left. So not only did I get to come in and say, I'm going to do it in this way, but I had someone else on my team and I was able to build everything back up. I got to $250,000 in premium, which was my goal for the year, back up to that amount and started to rebuild that department. And then I was also able to say, I'd like to be here full time. They wanted me there full time. I'm like, but only if you give me one more team member. I need someone I can delegate, you know, these things too, so I can grow the business. Right. And so,
where a lot of business owners or people running a business fail to see is that growth. They think I'm not going to spend anymore. They think growth means spending.
Right.
So in order for me to have that over there that they have, well, they have a staff of 15. I can't do that. Well, how about one?
Right. Just one.
That. Yeah. And that's where to kind of put it into our industry, that's where we see a lot of agents go wrong and take a step back, is they're very successful as an agent. So therefore now I should run a business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hire people to do administrative and I should hire agents to do what I do.
Right.
The majority of them fail because right. there's a step between I am a successful insurance agent helping clients and I am a successful business owner. There's about 20 million things that have to happen in that transition that yeah. most of us don't take the time to make because they see, well, if I'm one person making money, what if I had 10?
Right. Well, right.
It's very hard to replicate yourself. Most people yeah. Don't want to work that hard
right.
for somebody else. So, yeah, that's a big lesson. And I hate that you had to get to that point to feel that or to see that. But, and I'm so jealous. I told you and Paul at the time when you went to all the Tony Robbins stuff, but what was that like actually going to his, what's he called, a retreat or?
I don't know, just events, you know, yeah. conferences, whatever you call it, but there are different names for them, yeah. Depending on the one that you go to. And so my first opportunity to attend one wasn't until 2016. So 8 years yeah. later, I got to go to my first event. And the first event that we went to was Business Mastery. So most people start at UPW, like as this entry level deal. And it's great. That's great. That's like 3 days and it's like $900 or something like that to go to the 3 day. Business Mastery is my dad announced to our leadership team, because by that time we had a full leadership team. We had a finance person, we had an ops person, we had a marketing person. Like it was phenomenal. And that's all necessary. To your point about delegating and elevating and growing a business, you have to have a team and you have to be willing to spend the money to make the money. You're like, that's all its own conversation. But so my dad said, okay, I think I'm good. I'd like to step down from CEO. And, you know, I was pretty sure that Paul was going to be made the CEO just by default. And I was pretty sure that I was equally qualified. And by equally qualified, I mean equally unqualified, because we both had been running our departments or our things. I had been running kind of the operation, the teams, the culture, the marketing, and all of that. And Paul was brilliant at the sales and relationships and being the face of the company. And every time I would look up a CEO, it was both of those things. And so we had this unique scenario where the two of us together were a very complementary duo. So I said, I offered it up before they made the decision. I was like, here's a model. And so I said, let's consider a co-CEO model, because both of these things are true. We're already twins. It's a great marketing spin. It's really cool. Here's a list of companies that are doing it. So then as soon as we got into the seat, I said, okay, now that I'm in the seat, thank you. It's great. I'm not qualified. So I'd like to go get qualified for this position. And if I
need for this job that I'm not qualified for.
Yeah, right. And something I learned from another CEO much, much later was if you're a CEO, you should always be operating as though you're not qualified. Like always be seeking to get qualified for this seat, because right. it's a massive seat. It takes constant development and learning and education and self-directed education. And so they were looking at our finance guy was looking at a business training program. And I was like, and I showed him Tony Robbins, cause I'm like, it's 5 days. It's intensive. The guy changed my life. I didn't even know he did this business thing. Would you look at it? And so they looked at it, they liked it. And we end up going to Florida, West Palm Beach, Florida for 5 days. And it was the most impactful thing that I'd ever done in my entire life in terms of business. It taught me, like, you don't realize you're in a game. This is entirely a game. It's a game with all of our lives on the line, but it's a game nonetheless. And the goal of the game, like the target in the center, is to create raving fans. Yes. So all of your sales, all of your marketing, all of your operations, all of the things that you're doing are 100% to create a raving fan experience. And what does that look like? And so when we came back from that event, which, by the way, everything he does is by design. There's no agenda. You have no idea what you're going into. Right. You don't even know when you're going to eat next. You don't know. And some people are like, well, that's just rude. It is, maybe. But you're so awake So he knows how to wake up your whole body and your whole brain so that you're receiving everything, and you do the retention rate of that content. People are like, oh, and then you have a manual on your thing. I'm like, if you can't look at our business story, my life story, and people are like, does that stuff really work? I don't know. I'm an uneducated teenage mom that, you know,
I'd say it works.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about there's no like agenda, or you don't know when lunch is, and I've never thought about that in this way, but I think that's probably, like you said, by design, but probably so that you are living in the present. If I know lunch is in 45 minutes, I'm starting to wind down, like the clock at, you know, 4:15, you know, what employees start doing. We had this, I gave a talk not too long ago, it was toward the end of 2020. I think it was our AEP, you know, celebratory conference that we had just internally. And I addressed that because I said, I've said it myself. So I'm pointing the finger at myself too, but everybody during 2020 was, I can't wait until this is over. This is behind us. We can go back to this. And I'm like, guys, the world didn't stop.
Right.
Our business didn't stop. Our clients need us more than ever. Our business is doing very well in 2020. Thank God. But all of life should be looked at that way, right? If we're just I live in Missouri, so we're always waiting for the next season.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Right. We can't wait till spring. In spring, we start planning summer events. In summer, you know, we can't wait to get to the fall and the change of the colors. And in the fall, we can't wait to get to Christmas time and winter. We're always looking ahead and planning mm-hmm. for that. It's going to be so wonderful when we get there, mm-hmm. you know, whatever there is, whether it's a season or your next career or just out of this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take anything away from all the sadness that happened in 2020, but it was a pretty good metaphor for life, I thought, of always wanting to not be where we're at now
mm-hmm.
because I got to get there,
mm-hmm.
wherever that there is. So,
right.
And I saw you doing that through your transformation of listening to him and just understanding that it's not all about where I'm at now sucks and I just need to get to there and then it'll be okay.
Right. Right.
You kind of got to get rid of that mindset. And that's awesome.
Yeah. Definitely have to be in the present. And about seasons too. So it's interesting because one of the things he says in all of Business Mastery is winter is coming. In your business, in your life. Winter is coming. Life is very seasonal. It could be from your, you know, you're at this stage in your career to this stage in your career to this stage. You're raising small children. It's not always going to be that way. Then there's going to be this season and there's going to be this season. Everything is in seasons.
Yeah.
And if you know that winter is coming in your business, or what's the opportunity here in your own personal life? Knowing what you know now, just call COVID winter, okay? Because this is a winter that we're in, and it's going to get. Everyone thinks it's Game of Thrones, which is also there, and I'm a big fan. But it's. I reference Tony Robbins's Winter is Coming. So, what would you do differently? How would you have been prepared differently financially? This is the opportunity. What would you do differently with your health? There are a lot of people that I know that got in the best shape of their life during COVID because they, when they read the risk, the people that were at high risk, they were in that category just for being overweight or smoking or whatever it was. And they were like, it was like this wake up call. Cool. All of this stuff is just an opportunity. And if you see it as the opportunity it is, then you can be in the present because what's the opportunity now? Wow, we were spending way too much. Or thank God we kept our job, but what if we hadn't? What if we were like so many other people who hadn't? What are you going to start doing differently? If you waste this crisis, never, ever waste a good crisis. What is the opportunity? Don't waste this. What did you learn? What did you learn from if you didn't have the pain, your neighbor's pain? And what are you doing to make sure that if that same thing happened to you, you would be okay? I think that the opportunity is to, I also think the other opportunity is to consume less. Like we're just so obsessed with having more and we're all on the brink of not being able to keep it up. Should one incident happen in our lives? You know, I love, there's a rapper. It's totally offensive. And so if you don't like offensive things, you won't look him up, but his name, is Dave. Ah, I can't think of his name. He has this rap song where he's intentionally about saving money, and it's hilarious. And he's talking about how, like, he checks the receipt, and like, what if we lived that lifestyle where we were proud of what we didn't spend and what we didn't have? The fact that I'm driving a 7-year-old car, or, you know, mine's 5 years old. Like, I don't need a new car. I don't need it. Yeah. So just, what's the opportunity there?
Exactly. Well, I think everybody that's watching understands now the way I introduced you is once you're around Mary, you want to find other reasons to be around Mary. So I could do this all day, but for the sake of our listeners and your busy schedule, we'll go ahead and close. But I appreciate you very, very much. I always have. We were at a meeting once where you said something, you may not even remember it, but it stuck with me, and I've opened and closed many meetings with the same thought, which is, you literally stated that I want to live an extraordinary life, extra in all caps, and went on to talk about what all that extra means. And I've tried to pour that into my daily routine as much as I can too. So I thank you so much, Mary, for being with us today.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's so great to be here with you.
Absolutely. Well, have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Joanne. All right.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.